Okay, so I'm back again to do some more meditation. Thank you to the organizers for giving me a reasonable seat to sit in. I feel very uncomfortable in these Dhamma thrones that I'm given sometimes. Actually, the Buddha made a rule, said you shouldn't sit in high and magnificent seats, and so I feel a bit uncomfortable sitting on these things. Okay, so we're now going to do some metta meditation. And I'm sure many of you have practiced metta meditation before. Of course, one of the most popular meditations in Buddhism. And one, of course, which is not just not just for Buddhists, but is a human meditation, right? Everybody wants to be loved. And of all the different, many different kinds of meditation that the Buddha taught, and of all of them, metta meditation is, I think, one of the most effective and most useful, because the roots of so much of the suffering that we experience, the immediate suffering that we experience, is caused by anger. The most obvious forms of suffering, yeah? I mean, greed also causes a lot of suffering, but it's a bit less obvious, right? So, but anger, I mean, as soon as you get angry, you know it. You know that it hurts, you know that it feels awful, but you just can't help yourself. Can't help yourself. You keep on going and keep on saying those things to that person, and you know where it's going to end up, but you just do it anyway. And then when those angry thoughts and stuff come up in your mind and they go round and round and round and round, so much pain, terrible. So we have to try to cope with this, and we have to learn how it is to be able to let go of this anger, let go of what is causing so much suffering. And of course, ideal, this message is found in every world religion, every decent philosopher and mystic or whatever will say the same thing, that we have to learn to let go of anger, develop love. But the thing which really distinguishes Buddhism is that there's a very careful and very systematic method that we can use to help us to do that. It's one thing to say, love your enemies, but it's another thing to really, really say, how do you love your enemies? Okay, we know that that's an ideal, but how do we get there? How do we get from here to there? So what I'm going to, we don't have all that much time for the session this afternoon, so what I'm going to do is to lay out some of the groundwork for metta meditation, and talk about the beginning stages of the practice of metta meditation. Now, it's important to acknowledge that the method that I'm teaching this afternoon is just one method. That's all. Everybody has their own method. And so you can go out there and pick up books and get 101 methods. And if you want to practice all of them, please go ahead. And don't come to me and say which one is the right method. I have not practiced all of those 101 methods, so I cannot tell you which one is the best one, okay? I just know I practice this one and I like it. So that's all I can say, yeah? So you do the same thing. You try it, you like it. If it works for you and it helps you to overcome your anger and so on, that's fantastic. If it doesn't, that's fine. There's plenty of other approaches to meditation. So don't worry about this. Don't worry about is it the right one or not the right one or anything, but just practice in a way that will lead to peace of mind. Now, I'll just mention briefly the preliminaries to meditation, because we don't have that much time for it, but there's a very nice description of those preliminaries which we find in the Metta Sutta itself and many other places in the Buddha Suttas, where it talks about the development of sila and development of generosity and so on. And so these things are essential as prerequisites for any kind of meditation. But specifically when it comes to doing metta meditation, we want to pay careful attention to a few things. The most important prerequisite for metta meditation is patience. Yeah? Patience. You know how quickly that you can get angry if you lose your patience. Yeah? If you get stuck in the traffic, or you get stuck in a queue, or like myself yesterday, I have my mobile phone I've been travelling with, and the telecom company in Australia made a mistake on my billing, and they told me that I'd overused and I'd done all these things, and they were going to charge us all this money and stuff. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So I ring up, and any of you who've lived in Australia will know that Telstra is just dreadful to deal with on the on the phone. So you're there for hours, and they're playing this horrible music, and it's not even proper music. It's like distorted and crackly sound. And then they're like, "We'll be back to you in a moment." Yeah, sure. And then they're like 10 minutes of this terrible distortion and stuff, and then on and on and round and round. I'm like, "Thank you, sadhu, sadhu, Telstra, the great bodhisattva is helping me with my patience." Revealing to me any of my flaws that I might have been hidden to myself. So when we lose patience, we see the anger coming straight away. So developing patience is how we develop the metta. If we want one single practice to develop that's going to support our metta meditation as much as possible, then that's the practice of patience, kanti. Whatever happens, it's okay. So, as I said, we only have a short time, so I won't talk too much about the preliminaries, and we'll just get started talking about the metta meditation itself. Now, when we begin the metta meditation, we first begin by doing a practice of a few minutes of mindful awareness. And this is just a way of settling down, getting peaceful, and getting a bit aware of where you're coming from in the meditation. So what I mean is, like, how does your body feel? Do you feel tired? Do you feel anxious? Is your body stressed, or do you feel relaxed? Is there any feelings of anger there? Checking out your emotions and your mood and so on. If you're feeling, as a general rule, okay, if you're feeling sort of some fairly strongly disturbing emotions, or other conditions that are fairly fairly strong, like say strong tiredness or excitement or something like that, then it's probably not a good idea to do metta meditation at that time. Okay, so you're probably better off to do just mindfulness or anapanasati or something like that until you feel reasonably stable, okay? Not 100%, but just until you feel kind of normal again. If you're feeling like very anxious or something and you try to do metta meditation, it's really not going to work. So if you're feeling very anxious, then you just watch your breath and calm down until you feel okay, and then you can start the metta. So you use that period of a few minutes at the beginning of the meditation just to check out where you're at, make sure that your mind is okay, and that you're ready to begin meditating in the right way. Okay, so then we begin with the metta meditation, and we begin the metta meditation by saying, "May I be happy." Now, in this approach that I'm using, we have a specific way that we do it, and again, this is not to say that any other way is better or worse or anything like that, but just to say this is how we do it in this particular method. There are a few details in this method which I think are really really good and very, very valuable. Okay, first thing is that when we sit, we bring up the words, "May I be happy." So we begin this. I should mention beforehand that this practice involves developing metta for oneself, a loved person, a neutral person, and a disliked person. Okay, but we'll only this afternoon we'll only just make our first little steps on that. Okay? So actually, we should really just start with doing metta for oneself, but I might just be a little bit naughty and we'll do metta for a loved person as well this afternoon. Okay? So that's kind of going a little bit quickly, but you only live once, as they say. That's not a very Buddhist saying, is it? Anyway, okay. So don't be in a hurry, little bit by little bit. Now begin the practice, may I be happy. And say these words, may I be happy. Now, words are just words. The words are not metta, all right? But still, to have those kind words to say to yourself, it's better than saying something really stupid and nasty, right? At least you're saying something good. So even if you're just saying the words, then that's not too bad, yeah? And even if that's all you can do is say to yourself, may I be happy, at least that's something. At least you're stopping your mind from going into the unwholesome and you're developing that good intention. But the purpose of the metta meditation is not to say the words. The purpose is to develop the feeling of metta. Metta is the feeling. Right? So our meditation is based on the feeling of metta, not on the words. But we're using these words to create the foundations, to create a framework that will support the deepening of the meditation. And we're saying these words. Say them carefully. Articulate them to yourself clearly. Yeah? We say it firmly and steadily. When I was taught this method by a Thai teacher called Ajahn Mahachatchai, and he's a very nice monk who, unusually for Thai monks in Thailand, you tend to have quite a split between the meditation monks on one side and the study monks on the other side, and very rarely do the meditation monks do any study and very rarely do the study monks do any meditation, which I think is not ideal. But anyway, Ajahn Mahachatchai is one of the few monks who's sort of very good at both. So both are very good in meditation, also very good as Pali and so on. And so when he was teaching me this aspect of the practice, he said, you say the words to yourself like Shakespeare. Right? Like Shakespeare. And I was thinking to myself, what does Shakespeare mean to a Thai meditation monk? What does he think of when he thinks like Shakespeare? Does he mean you have to say, mayest thou be happy? I don't think so. I don't think that's what he was meaning. I suspect what he was meaning was that you have to say the words, you have to articulate them very clearly, yeah? Like if you're speaking on the stage, you have to say the words very clearly. See, sometimes when we get into meditation, we drift off a bit. You know, sort of mumble the words, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. And so we don't have that clarity in our mind, right? So when we're laying the foundations, saying this, may I be happy, we're gradually putting into place all of those qualities which are later on will be leading to those deep states of samadhi. Right? Now we won't see just yet, we won't see where this is leading, why we do it in this way. But just have a bit of faith and just practice, later on all of these parts will come together. So when we begin, may I be happy, may I be happy, the clarity and care that we bring to that, right? It's not just automatic words, it's what we put into it. And so if we put a lot into those words, then we'll get a lot out of them. Don't expect things to happen just automatically. So when we're beginning this first stage of the metta meditation, may I be happy, and you keep the awareness focused inside your body. This is very important. Right from the beginning, when we're practicing the mindful awareness, we're feeling the sensations, the feelings, the pressures, the energies inside your body. And we keep that going when we're doing the metta meditation. We keep the awareness inside the body as we're saying the words of metta. When the feeling of metta comes, we also feel that inside the body. Right? Now this is very important because often when we're doing metta meditation, it tends to be a bit vague, a bit floaty. We kind of can go up into the clouds and wandering around. It feels very nice, right? It's nice, and there's nothing wrong with it. But it tends to not really settle down strongly in samadhi. It tends to remain at a fairly shallow level. Oh, you have some nice thoughts and nice feelings and so on. And if that's all you're trying to do in the meditation, that's fine. But what we want to do is lay the foundations for deeper samadhi. And to do that, we're going to have much deeper levels of tranquility and a much stronger sense of togetherness, like bringing everything together inside the body. So we begin, may I be happy, say the words clearly articulated, say them continually, and spend some time with that. Don't be in a hurry, okay? Do these again and again and again and again and again. If you've ever learnt a musical instrument, like you used to be a guitar player, you know, when you begin playing the guitar, first thing you do is you have your index finger and your middle finger and you go ding, 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 one after the other, just on an open string. Ding, 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 ding. And you just practice, that's all, you just practice that. And then you practice this finger and that finger. Ding, 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 ding. And then you practice this finger and that finger. Ding, ding, ding. That's not music, right? It's just an exercise, yeah? But the more you put the care and attention to doing those exercises, then the more beautiful music that you'll be able to make later on, yeah? And, it, you know, when I was playing guitar, you know, it's the only thing that I regretted, you know? I went on and played professionally and so on. And the more you did that, the more you realize, actually, I wish I'd paid a bit more attention to doing those basic exercises and basic scales and all of those things. So, just do that and be content with that. While you're doing that, what this is doing is this is reminding you and getting you in touch with something very profound. And this is, to me, this is a beautiful thing with metta meditation. Like with the breath meditation, I mentioned before lunch that, you know, we watch the breath and we think of it something very ordinary and everyday, but actually the breath is something very profound. It's that which stands between us and death. And similarly with the metta meditation, even though it sounds very simple, may I be happy, it's trivial, right? But on the other hand, isn't that our most basic desire, our most basic need, is to be happy? Doesn't that underlie everything else we do in our life? We're constantly being driven by this need to escape from pain and to move towards happiness, to find happiness. And yet, so rarely that we seem to actually find it. So, when we're bringing this wish, may I be happy, may I be happy, we're actually getting in touch with this very, very fundamental desire that each one of us has, that desire, that wish to be happy. And that wish is purely wholesome, okay? It's not wishing harm on anybody, it's not wishing that anybody suffer, it's just wishing for happiness, that's all. Little bit by little bit, as you continue with the meditation, when you get in touch with that intention, that wish, then somewhere, somehow, comes the feeling of metta. Now, it's at this point in the meditation that things get a little bit unpredictable. Okay, so far what I've taught is pretty straightforward. Anybody can do that. Okay, and you can actually sit down and I'll do these different things. But as for the feeling, where does that come from? Right? Feelings are out of control, aren't they? Right? Well, feelings come and go. I mean, feelings are, by definition, the thing that we regard as least controllable in our lives. And our experience normally is that feelings, emotions, they just come and they go. We have no control over them. And what we're learning to do in meditation, especially in metta meditation, is that we're learning to develop those feelings in a positive and a wholesome way. Not by trying to control it, not by trying to force it, but by creating the conditions which will lead to the arising, the development, and the deepening of loving kindness. So when we're beginning the meditation, when we're setting out on this path, the feeling will come sometimes and sometimes it won't. Sometimes it will be strong, sometimes it will be weak, sometimes it will last for a long time, sometimes it will last for a short time. And we can't predict that or control it, okay? But gradually, as we continue with the practice, it will become more easy to access that feeling, and it'll become more reliable, more steady, more predictable. We're learning through our wisdom to get in contact with that feeling. And something, one thing about this practice which I very deeply believe, I can't prove it, but I believe, is that every person has metta inside them. I believe that you all have metta in you. And I believe that if you didn't, you'd probably be locked up in the psychiatric ward or something like that. Loving kindness is what keeps us sane. So you all have that. So if everybody has that feeling, why is it that when we meditate, we can have such different responses to the feeling? You know, I remember one retreat that I gave, and during the interviews, someone came up to me, and this old lady came up to me, and she's just one of these absolutely delightful, lovely old ladies, right? Who just is just so sweet-natured and so helpful, and always thinking of others, and always doing things to help others, and one of the most loving and caring people you could possibly imagine. And she came and she said, "I can't feel anything in the metta meditation." Yeah. And it was so obvious that she had a lot of metta, and yet somehow she couldn't find it in the meditation. So if you can't feel the metta in the meditation, maybe that's because you just have too much of it. Don't feel depressed. Sometimes actually it is like that. Sometimes it's the people who have more anger and ill will that feel more metta when they're in their meditating, because finally they're able to let go of it. Yeah, and there's such a relief. I was able to let go of that anger. And then the joy and so on will come up so much more. So don't worry about what reaction or response that you have. It's very unpredictable, right? And remember that I only have one mouth, okay? And then you have about, what is it, 60 or 70 sets of ears, okay? So there's one meditation method coming out here, and there's 60 or 70 or something going in there. Yeah? Everybody here will meditate differently. Everybody will practice differently. Everybody will get a different response from the meditation. Okay? So in other words, don't blame me if it doesn't work. But sooner or later, hopefully, you'll get in touch with that feeling. And what is that feeling like? People want to know, is this the real feeling of metta? There's no real feeling of metta, okay? All we can do is we can point to the qualities that that feeling has. And some of those qualities, it has a quality, most important one, it has a quality of joy, of happiness. Yeah? Metta always comes with happiness. Okay, if it's an equanimous feeling, it's not metta. So metta always has that joy. There's always some kind of warmth to it. It feels sometimes it feels like the closest thing that I can think of to what it feels like. It feels like if you have a candle burning in the darkness, and around the candle flame there's like a glow, like the radiance that you see just around the candle flame. And so when metta is developing, that's something like what it's like. It's that very gentle, warm glow around the candle flame. And sometimes you can almost see it as a light. Sometimes it's like a feeling, yeah? Actually, you know, it just is what it is. But that's how we can feel it. Sometimes when the metta comes, especially in the initial stages, it will be very dramatic. Okay? And tears will come, crying. Sometimes there's so much joy. Sometimes you see people sitting in the meditation just beaming, these big smiles on their faces. Yeah? And sometimes this strong rapture will come. You'll feel like lightning going over your whole body, or you feel like all the hairs on your skin standing up. Or maybe you might feel like you're floating up in the air. So if that happens to you, just don't open your eyes, okay? You never know. Right? Sometimes you feel like the opposite. You feel like not floating, but you feel like you become very heavy, but not sluggish heavy, but solid heavy. You feel like you've become like a mountain. You're sitting there, full of energy, immovable. And sometimes you feel like your body's exploding, like blowing up like a big balloon. You feel like so many things that can happen. Or not. Sometimes none of these things will happen, right? Sometimes you'll be sitting there and thinking, this is really boring. All these other people, where's this mountain feeling that I'm supposed to get? Right? So the only reason I mention this is just because it will happen to some people. So when it happens, then you have to understand this is just a normal part of that process. Yeah, don't get excited by it. You just let it come. It will take its time and it will go away. That's all right. And none of those things are really essential to what we're doing with the metta meditation. They're all side effects. So the real metta meditation, the real metta feeling that we're looking for is something that's very peaceful and tranquil. Usually, it will manifest first in one part of your body, often in the heart, but it can be anywhere. It doesn't matter too much where it is. If you find that your kind of mind is wandering outside and you're feeling this sort of metta as sort of like a cloud wandering around outside your body, then just bring your awareness back and focus back inside your body. Whatever you're doing, keep it inside your body. If you're having trouble doing that, if you're having trouble feeling your mindfulness established in your body, then before you begin the metta meditation, do some meditation on your skeleton. Okay, so you go through from the top of your head to your toes and imagine carefully, both feeling and seeing, the skeleton in the inside of your body. And then when that is clear in your mind, then you spread metta through all the skeleton. Okay, so that's a method that can help you to ground your mindfulness inside your body. So initially, when that feeling arises, wherever it arises, the first thing we do is just bring our awareness to it and keep awareness with that feeling. There's this beautiful simile that the Buddha gives in the Upakilesa Sutta. He talks about when he was meditating, it's like if you're holding a small bird in your hands, and if you hold the small bird too loosely, then it will fly away. And if you hold it too tightly, it'll crush it. So that's exactly the attitude we bring with that meditation, a feeling of metta. We feel like we're holding it like it's a little bird. Yeah, just holding it very carefully, but not at all tightly. Yeah, not at all crushing or hurting it. And there's that very, very subtle middle way between being too tight and too loose. Yeah, it's perfect attention. It takes time to get there, but when you do that, you realize things click into place. And when you feel that feeling is reasonably steady and reliable, it stays for a reasonable amount of time, it's not fluctuating too much, then you gradually move your mind through the different parts of your body. Yeah, just spreading your mind through the different parts of your body and taking the feeling of metta with it. Okay? Until you can feel the feeling throughout your entire body. Okay, so we want to have this feeling of the metta soaking through your whole body. And the Buddha used these beautiful images to talk about this. He said that, you know, meditation is something like a lotus which is growing underneath a pond, so that the cool, clear water of the pond would be soaking all the way through the lotus. Yeah? And in that simile, the lotus is like your body and the water is like the feeling of bliss and pleasure. So you feel that all the way through your body, evenly, steadily, and well established. And this is the completion of what we consider to be the first stage of metta meditation. And from there, we can begin to go to the other stages of metta meditation, to the loved one, the neutral one, and the disliked one. For this afternoon, we'll just try out doing metta for the loved one. Actually, for most people, it will take a lot of time to slowly develop and to come to this point. So don't be in a rush, but I'm just doing this just so that you can see what it's about. Now, when we do metta for the loved person, we need to choose that loved person with some care. And basically, we want to make sure that whoever we've chosen for the loved person is not going to kind of bring up any emotions that are going to disturb our meditation, right? I mean, because the reality is that most of the time, most of the people that we love, we have mixed feelings, right? We don't have pure emotions. We have mixed emotions, right? And so we don't want any twisted and perverse love-hate relationships in our metta meditation, okay? I remember I said that once when I was doing a retreat in Singapore, and there was this couple in the front row, and they'd immediately turned and looked at each other. So I thought, oh, that's good. There's obviously they have a degree of mutual understanding about their relationship there. So we want a loving... The person we choose for the loved person is not the person we love the most. It's the person we love the simplest. Yeah? Metta is a very simple emotion. It's a childlike emotion. Yeah, the love of a mother for their only child. Yeah, that's not a complicated emotion. That's not a mature emotion, right? The love that a mother has for her child is very different than the love that the mother has for her husband. Yeah, that's a much more mature, complex emotion. We can work that out later on, okay? But to start with, keep it as simple as possible, okay? So you should avoid doing metta for somebody who you feel sexually attracted to, okay? When I was in Malaysia a number of years ago, they asked me this question. They said that in the youth group in the Dhamma society, that they'd heard that some of the young men in the youth group would develop metta for some of the young women, and the young women would develop metta for some of the young men. And that's how, if you wanted to, you know, if you found someone attractive or something, that's how you picked her up. You sort of developed metta for them. And they said, is that the right way to do metta meditation? And, well, what could I say? I'm a monk, you know. I said, well, it's probably not a very good way of doing metta meditation, but on the other hand, it's not a bad way to pick somebody up. I mean, it's better than going down to the pub or getting on some internet chat forum or some of the other ways that people meet each other, so it's probably not that bad, all things considered. So, don't want to do metta for someone you feel sexually attracted from. And also for somebody who's passed away, right? Because if somebody that's died and you do metta for them, then sometimes you feel the grief comes, yeah? Because you're thinking about them, you feel that sense of loss, yeah? But also there might be some other problems, because sometimes if you do metta for them, they might want to come and give you a visit. And that might be a little bit scary too, yeah? So be clear about what I'm saying here. I'm not saying that you shouldn't develop metta for these people. You should develop metta for everybody, right? I'm saying specifically when we're doing this meditation, in this formal meditation sitting, that we should avoid those people and choose somebody who we're going to have a simple and childlike love for. That's all. It's only to do with the formal meditation, nothing to do with anything else, right? You should always do metta for everybody, right? But this is only because in the meditation, you have to be very, very careful. It's very refined, yeah? So we create a somewhat artificial environment so that we can develop it as smoothly as possible. So often the good person to choose for a loved person is somebody who's maybe like a nephew or niece, or somebody who's a cousin or grandparents or something like that. Somebody who you have a love for, but maybe who's a little bit more, you just have a not necessarily the person who's closest to you, but somebody who you have a very straightforward love for. Okay, so that's the loved person. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else essential. Oh, yeah, the other point with doing metta for the loved person is that we still keep on doing keeping the mind and keeping the metta inside your body. All right? So you're not going over there to where that loved person is. All right? And why? Well, because we're trying to develop unification of mind. So if I have my mind in here and I'm trying to send it over there, then the mind is not unified anymore. So we keep it all unified and keep the feeling inside your body. And people always ask me, do they feel it? If you do metta for that person, are they going to feel it? What do you think? Is that going to work? I mean, sure. I mean, we know that people pick up on each other's vibes and emotions all the time, right? And so you'd imagine that if we're developing a very purified and powerful emotions, that other people will be able to pick up on that even more so, right? Makes sense, right? But that doesn't mean it's true. We're Buddhists, remember? We will not just go believe anything by faith. We have to inquire, right? So this is how you do it. You meditate at 7 o'clock at night and you develop metta for Aunt Sally. You remember Aunt Sally from earlier? Okay. May Aunt Sally be happy and so on. Then the next day, you give Aunt Sally a call. How's it going, Aunt Sally? La la la, good to speak to you, so on and so forth. Anything special happened last night around 7 o'clock? And you can do that with all of your relatives and so on, and then you can ask them all and you can do a survey, yeah? And see whether it works, yeah? So that's a proper Buddhist approach to things, is inquiry, yeah? Okay, so for the next 45 minutes, let's do some metta meditation, doing meditation for oneself and for a loved person.